Hey there, it's Frank Buckley. I don't know about you, but around this time of year, just after the holidays, I sometimes have sleep issues. I had some vacation time around the Christmas week, and I slept in every day. And then I jumped right back into the work routine after the holidays. And in my case, that means waking up around 4:30 in the morning. So my mind and body seem to get a little confused. But the sleep doctor has come to the rescue. Dr. Michael Bruce is our go-to sleep doctor on the KTLA 5 Morning News, as he is for a number of other people and companies, including Dr. Oz. The guy really knows his stuff. He's a clinical psychologist and a diplomate of the American Board of Sleep Medicine and a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. He's written a few books on sleep, including The Power of When and The Sleep Doctor's Diet Plan. And he has some easy tips that I actually personally use to help me to get back to sleep when my body wakes me up too early, or I wake up and I start to think about things instead of sleeping. Maybe that's you right now. If it is, I hope to put you to sleep before the end of this podcast. Not something that I usually try to do, but it's something we'll try to do today with the help of Dr. Michael Bruce, the sleep doctor. Dr. Bruce, it's good to see you again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Here we are in another new year, and some people are sleeping well, but I suspect many people are having sleep issues as they come from being on vacation, the stress of the holidays, and then here we are into a new year. Is it common to have sleep issues at this time of year?
It is common to have sleep issues because a lot of times people are trying to kick off the new year with new resolutions, things that they want to kind of do. And so many people will say things like, oh, I'm going to get up a little bit earlier so that I can go work out, or I'm going to stay up a little bit later so I can get those books read that I promised myself I was going to read, things like that. And sleep sometimes has a backseat to some of these ideas or new things that are popping up in the new year. My preference, of course, is the opposite. I want people to be catching up on their sleep. I want people to be setting themselves up with really good sleep schedules for the year, because if they really want to accomplish those goals, sleep is a great way to start out.
Yeah, so when I'm during the holidays, I end up getting my 7 or 8 hours of sleep, which is, I know, perfect for me. And then I come back to work, and it's a jarring thing where I go from sleeping 7 hours to suddenly I have to wake up. In the case of New Year's Eve, I had to be up at 3:30 in the morning.
Oof.
And it's shocking
it's
to my
jarring system.
Are there things that people like me that we can do so that we don't have that?
So first of all, your schedule is kind of unique,
right?
Fortunately, many people don't have to get up at 3:30 in the morning. But if for some reason you do, if you're catching an early flight or you're up much earlier than you normally would, there are a couple things that you can do to kind of help perk yourself up. So the first one is light. So it turns out that if people remember, light kind of turns on or off the melatonin faucet in your brain. And remember, melatonin is kind of that key that starts the engine for sleep. It's not everything, but you got to have it. So if you're waking up that early, actually turning on the lights turns out to be a great thing because it turns off that melatonin. So it kind of gets rid of that brain fog, which is kind of one of those things that's, you know, you're kind of walking around in the morning thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to make it through? Light turns out to be a really big helper there. Another big helper there is a cool, not cold, shower. So if you're going to be getting dressed in the morning, go ahead and do all of your normal stuff. But the last minute of the shower, take the knob and start to turn it a little cooler. Wait 10 seconds, a little cooler. Wait 10 seconds, a little cooler until it's cold. I mean, not freezing cold, but what it does is it actually shunts blood to your trunk. It's very, very alerting for you in the mornings, and it will, bam, wake you right up.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that one. So if I'm someone who, you know, I've tried all these techniques that you just talked about, and I'm still maybe waking up in the middle of the night and then I can't go back to sleep, or I'm having various issues, and I come to Dr. Bruce and I say, you know what, I'm having problems with sleep. Put me through the test here. I'm a new patient. what are you going to ask me?
Oh, I can't wait to get my hands on you. So there's a lot of different ways that you can interact with a sleep specialist like myself. I have a very specific routine that I do for my patients, which is a little bit different than many doctors out there. Be honest with you, the first thing I do is I actually do genetic testing. So this is something new that I've started fairly recently, and you can actually take your data from something like 23andMe or Ancestry.com, and you can actually, I have a group that I run it through, and I can actually look, there are 74 different genetic markers in all of us that will predict how well or how poorly we sleep. And so getting that kind of information right out of the gates is critical because I can know, oh, is Frank a good sleeper or is Frank not such a good sleeper? Because that'll lead me down different paths.
Wow.
For me personally, I also like to do a sleep study on people, usually in their home, to rule out sleep apnea, narcolepsy, restless legs, anything like that that might be going on. But let's say they've got insomnia where it doesn't show up on the sleep study and genetically they seem to be okay. Sort of what are some of the steps and things that we can do there?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of different things. Believe it or not, there are several types of insomnia, right? There's I can't fall asleep versus I can't stay asleep versus I wake up too early. There's even insomnia associated with pain or anxiety or depression. Like it goes on and on and on. So then I have to figure out what kind of insomnia have you got? Because I have very different pathways for people doing what it is. But you mentioned waking up in the middle of the night, which believe it or not is the most common form. So let's talk about that for just a brief second. A couple of things that I've noticed with my patients who wake up in the middle of the night. My very first question, and this is gonna seem a little strange, is I ask them, what was the time of your last meal? Right? So it turns out that most of the people who are waking up, and by the way, they wake up at exactly the same time every night. They say, I wake up at 3:23, you know, and they know the time very, very distinctly.
Yeah.
If you count backwards from the timing of their last meal, it's usually between 7 and 8 hours. They're out of fuel in their brain.
But why does that affect me when I'm asleep?
So it gets interesting, right? So you would think, most people think when you go to sleep, you kind of put the car in park.
Yeah.
Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, you kind of put it into third gear. And when you hit REM sleep, the dream sleep where your eyes are moving back and forth, your brain uses as much glucose as if you were awake and stimulated by watching or talking or things like that. So you end up running out of fuel very, very quickly in the middle of the night because you're fasting, you're asleep.
Huh.
So quick trick that I do for a lot of my patients, it works very, very well. Not all of them, but some of them, is I have them use a teaspoon of raw honey half an hour before bed. And you're thinking, raw honey, Michael, what are you talking about? Raw honey is very difficult to metabolize, so it keeps your blood sugar stable throughout that period of time, which is great, and it keeps you asleep because it's fuel that's kind of on board.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, if you're not a big sugar person, like, and honey's not your thing, guava leaf tea does the same thing. And that's available. You can get it on Amazon. I mean, just type in guava leaf tea. Not guava fruit, but guava leaf tea turns out to do the same thing as well.
Okay. And let's say when I get up at 3:23 in the morning,
right,
I now start to think about stuff. And I can't get back to sleep. And I keep thinking, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. But I can't.
Yes. Well, so I tell people all the time, sleep is a lot like love. The less you look for it, the more it shows up. Right?
Okay.
You know, so when you think about it, what you don't want to be doing is thinking about sleeping because that raises that level of anxiety and that makes it difficult to fall asleep. There's a little known fact that most people don't know is that in order to get into a state of unconsciousness, your heart rate needs to be at about 60 or below, right? And so if you're thinking, oh my gosh, I got to sleep, oh my God, sleep, 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 you know, trying really hard, all that's doing is raising your heart rate. So a couple of quick things that people can do to lower their heart rate. My favorite is a breathing technique called the 4-7-8 breathing technique. So you breathe in for a count of four, you hold it for a count of seven, and you breathe out for a count of eight.
Hmm.
What this does is it gets all the carbon dioxide out of your lungs, but it gets all that new fresh oxygen into your lungs. But the most important thing is it lowers your heart rate almost immediately. This was a technique that was actually created by the military to be used for snipers because their heart rate has to be very, very low when they're doing the things that they're doing out there. So this is something that's been adapted that works really well. Another fun one that I have that people can use in the middle of the night that I've even used when I've had problems, and by the way, I'm not immune to having sleep problems. I'm human too, and so on occasion I've had these issues. Something's going on with my family or work, is I count backwards from 300 by threes. Okay,
now this I've used this technique that you've given me before.
And it works really,
really
well.
Work.
It's kind of surprising that something that simple can work, but what it is it's a distraction technique.
Yeah.
It's so mathematically complicated, you can't think of anything else, and it's so doggone boring, whoosh, you're out like a light. Those are a couple of things I have people do. Another thing that people should remember is if they do wake up in the middle of the night, if you don't have to go to the bathroom, don't. A lot of people will say, well, I'm up, I might as well see if I need to go. Especially guys who are getting a little bit older. I'm going to be turning 51 this year. And so I'm starting to wonder, am I going to have to start going to the bathroom in the middle of the night, enlarged prostate, things like that. So number one, get your prostate checked. So if you do have an enlarged prostate, that's a very particular path you need to go down. But if you don't really have to pee, going from a lying position to a seating position to a standing position elevates that heart rate, and that's not what we want. Mm. So lying back down and kind of chilling out turns out to be one of the best things that you can possibly do.
And to that point, and to add to what you said earlier about light, if I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom,
right,
is it a horrible idea to turn the
horrible
light on?
Horrible, because you just told your brain it's morning, right? So if you do have a tendency to wake up, what I do, strategically place nightlight in the bathroom and one in the hallway to get there so you're not banging into stuff along the way. Be very helpful.
Let's talk about what is the best time to wake up. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal just recently that the headline, something along the lines of 4 a.m. is the new 7 a.m. Is 4 a.m. the most productive time of the day?
No. So I don't agree with what the findings were in this article, but I'll tell you what they did is they interviewed a bunch of billionaires and asked them, what do you do? What's the thing that makes you the most successful? And a large number of them said, hey, I'm up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's my time to be most productive. A couple of things that were really interesting about this. Number one was the fact that they weren't productive in a work sense. They were productive on the personal side. So this was time they were using for meditation, for prayer, for getting their day straight, lining up their day, exercise, things like that, which I thought in and of itself was pretty cool and interesting that these people were interested in doing that kind of stuff. But the biggest thing that they left out was their chronotype. So I know you know what chronotypes are, but I want to talk a little bit about that for people out there. Most people haven't heard the word chronotype, but it turns out they know what it is. If you've ever heard of somebody being called an early bird or a night owl, those are chronotypes. So these billionaires are early birds, almost exclusively. It's just pretty interesting in and of itself that we seem to see those types of people seem to migrate towards that. But I don't think anybody needs to be getting up at 3:30 to 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the earliest early birds I've ever dealt with are 5 a.m. to 5:30 people. But you're getting up that early, you're really being very disruptive to your sleep cycle. And by the way, only 15% of people naturally wake up early. The other 85% of us, myself included, are much better at waking up much later in the morning time.
And what is that chronotype?
So there's three others. So the early morning one is called a lion. Then you've got a bear, which is the normal folks getting up at 7, going to bed around 10:30. Then you got the night owls like me, what I call a wolf. I never go to bed before midnight, ever. That's just me. That's just how I am. And then there are people that I call dolphins. These people have got kind of a super crazy sleep schedule, and it's very difficult for them to find any really good sleep time. A lot of them are my insomniac patients and the people that I have a tendency to treat as well.
And the dolphins, are they're naturally having difficulty finding that sleep zone?
So here's where it gets interesting. So remember I was talking about the genetic testing a little while ago? So what I'm doing now is I'm finding that a lot of my dolphins, when I genetically test them, genetically speaking, they're bad sleepers. So this can happen, and it happens in about 10 to 15% of the population where our genetics just are not great for good deep sleep or good length of sleep. And so once I can identify that, then there are certain techniques that I can use for people that can be more helpful for sure.
Some of us are as you said, in my case, I'm is it the bear, the person who wants to wake up around 7?
Yes, that's you.
I'm supposed to be at the peak of my performance at 7 when I'm signing on the air for the morning news.
That's
which
tough.
Means I'm waking up far earlier than my body wants to.
Exactly.
So for people like us who are in this position where work forces us, or maybe it's a commute, to get up earlier than our chronotype suggests, what do we do?
So you're a shift worker. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it, right? But you're not doing the night shift. You're doing the super early shift.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people out there like that. So number one is getting that light exposure early in the morning can be very, very helpful for sure. Number two is giving yourself some fuel, right? But be careful. What you don't want are lots of carbohydrates in the morning. Carbs make us sleepy. It turns out that when you ingest carbohydrate, it increases something called serotonin in your brain, which is a calming hormone. You don't want to be calm when you're trying to wake up.
Yeah.
You want to become more alert. So high protein, high fat turns out to be really good brain food. Things like avocado or an egg white omelet, things like that can be very, very good for you early in the morning as well. Other things that I want people to think about is movement, right? And so it's okay to exercise that early in the morning, but I'm not saying go out and run a marathon, right? 15 minutes of some good stretching, a little calisthenics, push-ups, sit-ups, chin-ups, something to kind of get the blood flowing can be very, very good. And here's one that I learned from my son, music, right? So my son, it's terrible to wake him up in the mornings. He's 16 years old. His whole biological clock wants to sleep until noon every single day. And he's got to get up at 6:15, 6:30 to make it, you know, to school on time. So the rule is at 6:30, he's allowed to put on whatever music he likes. And you know what happens? The whole house is bopping around. We're all listening to tunes. And you know what? It really energizes a lot of us. So if you're up early, don't disturb your bed partner, but maybe put in your earphones and listen to some music that really kind of makes you kind of want to dance. I know it sounds a little silly, but that elevation of emotion attached to the music turns out to be really helpful to wake people up.
You talked about light a couple of times now. And when you say light, are you talking about those fancy lights that I have to go out and buy, or just flicking on the lights?
Either or. Mm-hmm. So there are some lights out there that are specifically developed to help people wake up. If you go on to like Amazon and you type in light box or light therapy, you'll find a whole bunch of different ones there. But I'm not, you don't have to go that far if you don't want to. Just literally turning on your regular indoor incandescent bulb lights or LED lights can actually be enough.
You talked about your 16-year-old son.
I did.
How biologically, he wants to wake up at noon.
He does.
For those of us who have teenage kids who get frustrated thinking you are wasting the best hours of the day right now in that bed, and at 1 o'clock in the afternoon you finally want to wake up and I've already had lunch,
right?
I've already come home from work. You say that that's sort of what their biology dictates.
It is. And I'm here to let all the parents out there know, I get it. I know how frustrating it is. Leave them alone.
They have to go to school.
Well, I get that part. If they're going to school, they're going to school. But on the weekend, let them sleep in. A lot of parents are like, oh, you're wasting the day away. You could be doing so much more. No. It is not a waste, okay? I promise you, they're growing and they're healing in their sleep. They need more sleep than we do. Their bodies are still in those stages. Let them sleep. The best day to sleep in is Saturday, more so than Sunday, for a couple of different reasons. Saturday is good because it's after a long week. These kids are usually pretty sleep deprived because they've been getting up so early, and they can sleep sometimes until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? The reason I don't like Sunday is because if you sleep in late on Saturday and then sleep in late on Sunday, your biological clock wants to sleep in late on Monday, and that makes it more difficult. So the rule in our house is you can sleep as late as you want on Saturdays, but on Sundays, I like my kids getting up within an hour or so of their normal wake-up time.
Oh.
So if they're getting up at 6:30 during the week, I'm trying to kind of nudge them around 7:30, 8 o'clock with, hey, do you want some breakfast? something enticing to try to get them out of bed.
Yeah.
Turning on the music, turning on the lights, things like that are very helpful.
Okay. Let's talk about sleep trends for 2019.
Sure.
And these are some things that you've written about in your blog, and we'll give folks a way to get to that so they can read these things themselves.
Sure.
But sleep trends for 2019, one of the things you talk about is inflammation and sleep. What is inflammation and how does it affect sleep?
So it's really quite fascinating, but if you start to look at the medical literature these days, almost every area of disease, specifically autoimmune disease, so we're talking things like Crohn's, we're talking about fibromyalgia, just people waking up and not feeling great, there's an internal inflammation, literally a swelling of the tissues. And that becomes very problematic because our bodies aren't allowed to flow as easily as they could be. So like when you get hurt and there's an inflammation, what's happened is all the white cells are going there to attack that problem. Well, if you've got inflammation all over your body, of course you don't feel great. So one of the things that we're looking at now is that sleep deprivation or the lack of sleep increases this level of inflammation. So again, I beat this drum all the time. The more sleep that you can get for you, the better. I've been a 6.5 hour guy my entire adult life. So 6.5 works perfect for me. Again, I genetically test myself. I figure these things out. Lots of people can do that kind of stuff. Figuring out what amount of sleep you need for you will definitely help lower that level of inflammation. There's also products on the market that can be helpful with this as well. You know, one of the big topics now nowadays is CBD. Or cannabidiol, which is a constituent of medical marijuana. So let's talk about that for just a second, because it's a great anti-inflammatory. So when you look at CBD, and if you're interested to learn more, check out some of my blogs on it. CBD helps reduce inflammation across the entire body. Now, there are different ways that you can administer it. And by the way, when I talk about CBD, I'm not talking about THC, right? Because that's the psychoactive portion of medical marijuana. I'm talking about CBD, which is the really much more of the medicinal side of things. But looking for supplementation that has CBD in it can be very helpful, especially sleep supplements, because you can combine the sleep-inducing aspect of some supplements with the inflammation-reducing, and people get a lot better sleep.
Okay. You've also talked about intermittent fasting and
yes.
sleep.
So this is kind of an interesting idea. So kind of a newer idea that's come about. And by the way, when I say newer idea, this idea has been around for thousands of years, but it's kind of become trendy again, is only eating during certain specific times of day. In my book, The Power of When, we looked at chronotypes, but specifically, when do people eat? It turns out that if you can actually only eat during a 6-hour, 8-hour or 12-hour period of a 24-hour period, you can actually maintain weight or even lose weight almost no matter what you eat. Now, I'm not saying if you eat ice cream the whole time that you're not going to gain some weight, right? But if you can keep your intake to a certain period of time, again, 6 to 8 hours, you will actually maintain and in some cases lose weight. Intermittent fasting is doing this exact process where you only eat during a 6 or an 8 hour period of the day. So a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll skip breakfast and then they'll start around lunchtime. Now, when I say skip breakfast, that's not necessarily the best idea in the world. So make sure that you're, you know, supplementing yourself with vitamins, minerals, maybe even a green drink to help hydrate you, because hydration is still key. Hydration needs to happen 24/7. But the food intake can actually be quite different. And intermittent fasting, which again has become more of a trend these days and helps people lose weight or maintain a healthy lifestyle, can have a pretty big effect on sleep. So what you want to do is make sure that you're timing it right so that your sleep is at the right time and your food intake is at the right time.
But doesn't that sort of go against what you said earlier about when I wake up, I should have an egg white omelet and have some sort of protein to get me up?
So it depends upon what your goal is.
I see.
Right? And so if your goal is to wake up in the morning with lots of energy and have an energetic day, and let's say you're a physical person and you're going to be out exercising, you want fuel in the tank for sure. But if that's not your goal at the beginning of the day, and let's say you're exercise more towards the end of the day, an intermittent fasting is not a bad idea at all.
Okay. Speaking of dieting, keto and paleo diets have exploded.
They have.
How did they affect sleep, and how should we do these, incorporate these things?
This is pretty fascinating. So almost every patient that I have that does a paleo or a keto diet, and by the way, these are the high fat, high protein diets, very low carbohydrate diets, they're very alerting. And a lot of people tell me, Michael, I don't need to sleep as much, or I stop drinking coffee. I find myself being more alert. There's some biological reasons why that occurs, which aren't necessarily bad for you, but be prepared that if you're going to start one of these diets, it may actually have an effect on your sleep and make you less sleepy at times when you normally would be. Now, a lot of people think of that as an advantage, like, hey, I'm not tired, you know, that's great. But some people are actually finding that it's difficult to fall asleep at night. So if you're doing a keto or a paleo diet, one of the things I recommend is consistency in your wake-up time and consistency in your bedtime, right? Because if your body knows when it's supposed to sleep, it has a far greater likelihood of being able to achieve that goal than if you're randomly going to bed at this time or going to bed at that time, especially when you're on one of these diets.
It's interesting you say that, because I have a tendency in my sleep, and I've talked to you about this before. I tend to get the, you know, 5 to 7 hours of sleep at night, depending on the night. On a work night, it's typically 5 to 6 hours.
Right.
My body is a little tired. I know that I need a nap. And so I will, around 1 or 1:30 in the afternoon, put on a certain TV show that sort of, and it just, it's like, it's my body says, oh, that TV show is on that that I like at that time of the day. And I fall right to sleep.
Yeah, it's a trigger.
Yeah.
Right. So there's two things that you talked about that I think are important for our listeners and our viewers here. Number one is napping. I'm a big fan. Okay. And if you can't get the amount of sleep a night, like you might only be able to get 5 or 6 hours, and your body might need a little bit more. What do? Napping is a great supplement to your sleep.
So I can top up on my sleep.
Absolutely.
And
you
get
can.
What is required.
Yeah. Unless you're an insomniac. Now, for people with insomnia, napping is terrible because napping actually prevents them from being able to fall asleep at night. So believe it or not, for my insomniacs, I actually curtail the amount of sleep that they get, which seems very counterintuitive. But for my insomniacs, a lot of times having them go to bed at midnight and waking up at 6, only giving them 6 hours, because when I raise their sleep deprivation, it makes them more sleepy naturally. And I don't have to use things like medications to get them to fall asleep. That's number one. So napping is, I'm a big fan of napping. I think it works very, very well for people. But you also mentioned that there are some triggers, a particular show that you watch. For me, it's golf. Right? Like if I turn on the golf channel, I'm done.
If
right?
I speak to you in a golf right. voice right
exactly.
now.
Right. And it's, you know, it's kind of funny, but it really works out that way. And yeah. of course, with the New Year's and all the college football that's been going on and the professional, all the sports, it's kind of hard to fall asleep to some of those things. But if you can find something that helps you fall asleep, go for it. I'm not the sleep doctor that says it's bad to fall asleep with the television on. Mm-hmm. I'm probably the only sleep doctor that says it's okay.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you why. Because that's what happens in my house. Okay, my wife falls asleep with the television on every single night.
Huh.
And you know what? I understand why. She uses it to distract herself.
Yeah.
Right? And you know what? There's nothing wrong with a little distraction. 95% of the televisions have a timer built into the software. Just get the timer, click it on for an hour after you usually fall asleep, and you're good.
And is it okay that with the TV on, mm-hmm. the sort of the flashing that happens, right? I mean, it's still happening.
Right.
Even though your eyes are closed, you can kind of, you're not in a darkened
right.
room.
So here's the truth of the matter is there's a couple of different things that you can do here. Number one, blue blocker glasses. So I actually have my own line of blue blocker glasses now. We can give people the link so they can go and check
right.
them out if they'd like. But these are great for watching when your eyes are open watching because then you don't get that blue light. Or if you're playing around trying to get your high score on Candy Crush or whatever it is on your phone,
right.
better to wear these glasses right before bed. Once your eyes are closed, the truth of the matter is that you're really not watching. You're really listening mm-hmm. to the television. So if you lower the volume, and believe it or not, most televisions, you can actually lower the brightness. And then it gets really easy really quickly. Or wear a sleep mask.
Yeah.
You know, I've got lots, and there are some great sleep masks out there. I've got lots of patients who use sleep masks, and they're very effective.
Yeah. There are some people who annoy me in that they can get by with 4 hours of sleep.
Right.
Right. The Bill Clintons of the world.
Right.
Who famously
Donald Trump.
With Donald Trump.
Right.
These are people who seem to get by with 4 to 5 hours of sleep,
mm-hmm.
and they claim that
right.
they're good to go. They don't need that nap later in the day. How is that possible?
That's genetics. So some people hit the genetic lottery and actually genetically, remember when I told you we do the genetic testing, we can actually learn if you're a short sleeper because that's actually something that people can be. Genetically speaking, you can be a short sleeper. It's pretty rare. I mean, we're talking about less than 1% of the population is probably genetically a short sleeper. But if there's 400 million people in the United States, that's 4 million people who could be short sleepers.
So it is a thing.
So it's a thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And sometimes people have just kind of hit that, you know, genetic lottery and they can do that. Honestly, 99% of people really can't do that. And a lot of people think that they can do that. Trust me, if you need an alarm clock to wake up, you are not a short sleeper.
Right. If I do consistently only get 4 or 5 or whatever mm-hmm. the amount of sleep is, but it's less than my body requires,
right.
how much damage am I doing to myself?
So there's bad news here. It's pretty significant. So there's a couple different things that we want to think about. So number one, we talked a little bit about inflammation before. Sleep deprivation causes increased level of inflammation in the system. That's something we've recently learned. So what are you doing? You're absolutely positively causing harm to the body by not sleeping enough. Remember, sleep is healing, right? That is what sleep is for our bodies. And so if our bodies don't get a chance to heal, it's like being an athlete and playing with an injury every day, all day long, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're never giving your body a chance to heal. So you really do need to be cognizant of the idea. Now, if there are circumstances that say, hey, you just can only get 5 hours of sleep, that's where napping can come in and be a good supplement for people or trying to catch up a little bit on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. The last sleep trend that I want to ask you about is the microbiome and sleep. And there's so much about gut health today.
Yeah.
And that affects our sleep as well.
Absolutely. And here's what's interesting is sleep affects our gut and our gut affects our sleep. So this is a two-way street and we're really learning quite a bit about it. But our gut health or all of the bacteria that are in our gut, which by the way, tells our body to do everything. Most people don't realize it, but we call the gut our second brain. And here's why. All neurotransmitters are actually manufactured in the gut. They're not manufactured in your brain. And so your gut has a circadian rhythm to itself. That's that biological clock that tells your body when to do certain things. And so your gut has its own circadian rhythm. And if your sleep is off, Your gut doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing. Again, consistency in your sleep schedule. And I don't really care what your schedule is. If you're like me and you want to go to bed at midnight and wake up at 6:15 every day and that works for you, great. Just do it consistently. Mm. And what you'll find is that your gut will actually appreciate it quite a bit.
Wow. That makes it impossible, though, when you fly overseas, right?
Yeah.
When you do a 10-hour long-haul flight to Europe or to Asia,
right?
I find that my body says, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yes.
Are there things that I can do to reduce the effects of jet lag?
Absolutely. So first of all, I'm going to give everybody out there a New Year's, New You freebie, okay?
Okay.
So if everybody goes to timeshifter.com/thesleepdoctor, you can download for free an app that I helped design specifically for jet lag.
Mm.
So historically, when I would have a patient come to me, an example was I actually have treated somebody who's of royalty. And they came to me and they were flying from very far distances to come to Los Angeles. And they had jet lag for 6 or 7 days. And I said, wow, that's not going to work. And so we created a program using napping, caffeine, melatonin, and light therapy in very particular combinations, and we completely obliterated their jet lag.
Wow.
Just got rid of it, which was pretty amazing. So once we started to learn what the factors were, then we started to put it into new situations. So this app, Time Shifter, is pretty amazing. We actually have it right now on the Mercedes Formula One race car team, because those guys and gals have got to be on point. I mean, you know, they don't win by hundredths of a second, right? Mm-hmm. So they really have to kind of know what's going on, and they're racing all over the world. We've got them really dialed in. So this app works really, really well, but it's really a combination of using those things. And melatonin, this is the right use for melatonin. And I know lots of people out there see melatonin in the store, and they don't know, is it a sleep aid? What is it? Here's the thing to remember. Melatonin is not a sleep initiator. Melatonin is a sleep regulator, okay? So what do I mean by that? Melatonin doesn't make you feel sleepy. Melatonin tells your brain it's bedtime. So when you're traveling and your bedtime is Los Angeles time, but you're in Singapore, what do? There's very specific times that you can take melatonin, and that will help your brain get adjusted very quickly. And then when you wake up, have that blue light. So using light therapy can also be very helpful.
Wow, very interesting. All right, a quick round of things on sleep that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
Beds. Are beds important, and how do I pick the right bed for me?
Oh, gosh, this is a big question. So I believe that sleep is a performance activity, right? And so if you have the right equipment, you will perform better. So I'm a runner. Right. And so if I can run a 5K with my flip flops and some, you know, my torn shorts and a boombox on my arm, but my time's not going to be too good. Right. But if I've got my Asics on, my dry fit wear, I got my tunes going, I'm going to perform better. The same holds true with sleep. And that sleep equipment is mattress, pillow, comforter, duvet, what have you. That whole sleep system turns out to be very, very important.
Hmm.
Now, there are a ton of options out there for mattresses, okay? And here's the problem is you walk into one store and you find something that you like, and then if you walk into another store, it's completely different names, it's completely different outside coverings, and there's the inability to comparison shop is flagrant throughout the industry.
Mm.
So you really want to be able to go to a place where, number one, you can honestly know that you're getting a decent deal. And by the way, always look for the sale, okay? Mattress selling seasons are very, very interesting, but the thing that people need to know is about 4 times a year, mattresses go on sale.
Mm.
Don't ever pay full price for a mattress if you can help it,
right?
And there's a lot of negotiating that can go on in that type of thing. Believe it or not, President's Day, which is going to be coming up not too far away, is one of those selling seasons, if you will. Right now, which is kind of the late December, early January, is not a big mattress time because people are buying other gifts, right, and spending their money in other ways. I personally love it when people give people pillows as a new option. And that's a nice place to start because mattresses can be expensive. And then what happens if you don't like it? And then the returns, like there's a lot that goes into that. But pillows are a little bit different. You can ask yourself 3 different questions and you can kind of narrow down your pillow choice. Question number one, squishy or firm, right? So do you like a pillow that you can mash up and kind of put where you like it? Or do you like kind of a block, like foam kind of pillow? So decide on that one first. The next is your starting sleep position. So if you're a back or a stomach sleeper, you want something very, very thin, right? Because if you have something thick, it's going to push your head forward. It's not going to do too well. You're going to have a hard time breathing. If you're a side sleeper, you want something thick because you got to make up for the space between your ear and what would be the bed.
Right.
You want your nose basically in line with your sternum or the center of your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a pillow that lifts your head up is going to be important. Believe it or not, you should be changing your pillow about every 18 to 24 months.
But I love my pillow.
You love your pillow, but your pillow is continuing to break down as you use it. The human head weighs somewhere between 8 and 9 pounds usually. And so there's really no other piece of equipment that you have that's going to have 9 pounds pushing on it for 6 to 8 hours a day.
Right.
And so the structural integrity of the pillow itself begins to fail. Now, that's more on the squishy pillow side than on the firm pillow side or the thick pillow side. When we look at those pillows that are usually made of foam, those can last for up to 3 years. But honestly, your neck changes more during that period of time than other things. And if you wake up and you've got any stiffness or soreness throughout the upper part of your neck or the top part of your shoulders, that's a pillow problem, not a mattress problem.
I see.
The third question you want to ask is pain, right? So do I have any pain? Like, do I need to see a chiropractor or a orthopedist or somebody like that for neck pain? If you've got pain, then there are very particular pillows and you want to talk with your doctor about that because they may have some very specific recommendations. But I do have one quick hack or tip that I can give people that I use when I'm on the road. So sometimes you get to a place, a hotel, and you haven't brought your own pillow and the pillows are terrible, right?
Yeah.
They're overstuffed and they do that on purpose because they last longer that way. And I'm actually a stomach sleeper. I know, worst position, but I'm guilty of it. And these super fluffy pillows, they kind of crack your neck and it's terrible. So what I do is I actually take a towel, not the washcloth, but like the middle size towel, and I roll it up and I put it along the horizon or the bottom of the pillowcase inside, and it gives my neck that support. Most pillows, especially the overstuffed ones, they come together in what's called a knife edge, but there's very little support at the bottom, which is where it's hitting you, which is where you need it the most. But if you just slide a rolled up towel right in along the horizon and then you use it, it can really save your neck.
But even as a stomach sleeper?
Even as a stomach sleeper. So so as a stomach sleeper, I'm not face down. What's happened is I have to turn my head to one side.
Right.
And so a lot of times I actually cradle one pillow. I've got one pillow. I'm like MacGyver when it comes to pillows. I got a pillow here. I got a pillow here. I got something around my neck. People think I'm nuts. I sleep well.
Great. And to that point, in terms of sleep position, you say that stomach is the worst.
It is the worst.
Is the side the best or back the best?
So it's interesting. So the back historically has been the best because when you take a weight and you push it across the skeletal frame, the more surface area, the better, right? So if you're lying on your back, it can be supported very easily this way. Whereas when you're on your side, everything is pushing to one side and you kind of get what's called capillary crush or that tingly sensation on one side, which makes you have to move. However, if you snore or you got sleep apnea, the back is the worst position because your anatomy falls to the back of your throat like your tongue and makes it all the worse. So if you snore or have sleep apnea, your side sleeping is going to be better. Otherwise, back sleeping is probably the best physical position for you to sleep in.
Finally, sleep machines.
Like,
do you believe in those? The ones that make noise or
ocean
sound?
Oh, I love sound machines. So here's what's interesting about sound machines. So first of all, we can still perceive noise in our sleep. This is why alarm clocks work, right? But here's what's really fascinating is if it's too quiet, your hearing gets actually more acute. You actually hear more the more quiet it is, which means you hear the branch that's scraping along the side of the house. You hear the dog rustling in the corner. You hear everything, especially for people who are having a hard time falling asleep or staying asleep. I really like sound machines quite a bit. The one that I use is made by a company called iHome. So those are the ones that make like the boxes that go beside your bed where you can plug your phone into.
Yeah.
They've got a whole system that's got special sounds, meditations. And by the way, believe it or not, ocean sounds have been shown to help people fall asleep more quickly. I know you know, but I work with Princess Cruise Lines, and that's one of our great advantages is when people are asleep at sea, we get those ocean sounds that really help people sleep.
Wow. All right. Well, Dr. Bruce, it's always a pleasure, and we always feel like we're going to get a better night's sleep after speaking.
All right.
So
that's what I like.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And if you want some more information on Dr. Michael Bruce or his books, or if you want to contact him personally for help on getting a good night's sleep, go to my podcast page where we'll connect you. You can find that at ktla.com/Frank Buckley Interviews. And I hope you'll watch Frank Buckley Interviews on KTLA this coming weekend to see our conversation. It airs at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday and just after midnight on Sunday. We also re-air the previous week's program at 5:30 in the morning on Saturday, and we post all of our shows on YouTube. Just search for Frank Buckley Interviews. A new podcast drops every Wednesday, and I hope you'll subscribe so you won't miss a single episode. Thanks for listening this week, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.